Thank you, Diane. And the symposium today has been full of just a lot of excellent papers looking at the physiological analysis of crop water use and efficiency and basing it on the experimental work and knowledge that we have. I will be ending this symposium on quite a bit of a different note. What I would like to do is take one of the crop models that we have been using for quite some time, and I would like to look at how it is functioning in terms of the yield and harvest index predictions across a wide range of environments and conditions, mainly focusing on differences in response to water. So I'm bringing it up at a considerably higher level and a more modeling approach than what the rest of the symposium papers have been. And today, even though we've been working with a number of crops, I'm going to emphasize winter wheat and corn as an example of what we're finding and learning. The approach I'm going to use in this talk is first to give an overall description of how yield is predicted in the EPIC-based plant growth model, and then we'll look at evaluation of yield and harvest index predictions two different ways. We'll look at a sensitivity analysis using in response to the water stress factor using a standalone plant growth model and generic weather data, which I'll explain later. And then we'll bring it back to the real world, where we're going to look at how yield and harvest index responds across diverse environments and soils. For those of you not familiar with the EPIC-based plant growth model, the original EPIC model has been used with slightly different versions of it in a whole variety of models. I've listed some of them here. And we're working on, as we move some of our modeling efforts up to the watershed scale, we're calling the version of it UPGM, Unified Plant Growth Model, because we're trying to take some of all the different slight variations that have been developed and put them together into one version. Now, overall, EPIC uses what I say is probably the most common approach in most of our crop simulation models. I call it the carbon or energy-driven approach to simulating yield. And the basic idea of this is it intercepts and converts radiation to produce biomass, and then this biomass is distributed to various organ components like the seeds, leaves, stem material, roots, so forth. As you can imagine, there are many, many ways that we can do both, simulate both of these processes and think of them. So what EPIC tends to do, again, in a general level, is it uses radiation use efficiency for determining biomass production, and then uses a harvest index approach to allocating the biomass to the seeds. More specifically, to give you a little bit better idea of how this works, is radiation interception is based on Beer's law. And in this case, we have the intercepted photosynthetically active radiation is a function of the solar radiation that day and times multiplied by the canopy architecture in terms of the leaf area index and the light extinction coefficient to determine the amount of radiation that is intercepted by the canopy. Then we want to calculate the potential daily biomass production, and this takes the intercepted photosynthetically active radiation and multiplies it by the energy to biomass conversion factor. This factor is a default parameter that is input for each crop, and it's specific to that. Once we have the potential biomass production, the actual daily biomass production takes the potential biomass production and it multiplies the effect of 0 to 1 stress factors. But in this case, it uses Liebig's law of the minimum, where it uses the most minimal water stress factor. These water stress factors go from 0 to 1, so obviously as stress increases, whether it be, say, water or nitrogen or temperature stress, as a stress increase, you approach 0. That reduces the daily biomass production to give you the actual daily biomass production. Crop yield, as I mentioned, uses the harvest index approach, where it tries to maintain a balance between what goes to the grain and what goes to the rest of the plant. And so it'll take an adjusted harvest index that's determined through time and multiplies it by the biomass production. Just very briefly, a few things on the adjusted harvest index is it is adjusted non-linearly from 0, And of course, it cannot exceed what the input harvest index parameter is, which is the maximum that it can be for the crop. And it's adjusted daily due to water stress, particularly near the time of anthesis, as often the crop is, plants are very similar, sensitive to that time of stress. Now we've used, as I mentioned, we're starting to develop this unified plant growth model, and we're basing it on a standalone version of the EPIC plant growth, EPIC-based plant growth model that's used in the WEPS, the wind erosion model. And one advantage of doing this is that when we work with these whole system models and we try to look at yield predictions or something, they're so the results are so confounded by the interactions of what's happening in the other submodels as well. And what we also wanted to do is we wanted to use what I'm calling generic weather data. And we created these files for three locations, Fort Collins, Akron, and Pendleton. I'll only show you the results for Akron, Colorado today. And we created, from long-term monthly means, we created daily temperature by linear interpolation between these means. Same thing we did for daily precipitation, where long-term monthly means and number of rainfall events per month to input into the model. And one of the reasons for this is to get away from the constantly fluctuating environments that we have, particularly in the Great Plains, both during the growing season and between growing seasons. And what we did is we took the water stress factor, and either for the whole year or by seasons, and I'll only show today for a whole year, we ran for a constant water stress factor, again going from 0 to 1 by a tenth of an increment, and wanted to look at how yield and harvest index responded to this constant stress factor. And we used the idea, we just used the default input parameters from WEPS with no calibration. The point was not to try to get a best fit, we just wanted to see model response to this. So if we look at, in this particular graph, we have water stress factor, again for the whole year, different values of it, constant, and yield, in this case it's winter wheat yield. And once we see that we get up to about 0.2 stress factor, it's essentially a linear response of yield to the water stress factor. And we're getting yield response at very low water stress factors. If we look at then how that's reflected in the harvest index, what we see is this typical pattern, curvilinear pattern. If we look at corn, the yield is very similar to what we saw for winter wheat, except for essentially linear again, but we've moved up to just a little bit higher on the water stress factor before we start to get to that linear phase. Now, if you want to be a little creative in imagining, you can start to see a little bit of a sigmoidal pattern, which we would tend to expect as a response to water stress. Physiologically, that's what I would tend to expect. But it's still more or less linear. And this was interesting, I thought. The harvest index for corn, once it got, once it moved up, it's essentially a flat water stress factor, especially from, I think this is about 0.2, I think it is, 0.3, and it's just flat. So some of the conclusions from this, in trying to summarize various runs we've done, is that the yield and harvest index patterns we observed four crops stayed the same at all the three locations, Fort Collins, Akron, and Pendleton, even though I didn't show a couple of those sites. The yield response was more or less linear, and it started at about a water stress factor of 0.2 for wheat, and I think it was 0.3 for corn. Yield was also produced at very low water stress factor values for both crops. And the harvest index pattern, this I think is somewhat of a key point, it differed slightly between the crops. But the main difference being that wheat had more sensitivity at lower water stress factor values. This suggests that harvest index needs to be a little bit more responsive, especially to the low water stress factor values, and I would argue, in thinking more about it, probably at the upper end as well, because we were getting, if you remember with corn, a very stable flat harvest index. Now moving back to real weather, the real world, we wanted to look at how yield and harvest index model predicted that across a wide range of environmental conditions and soils. And this gets where it gets complicated because, again, we go back to the interaction with other submodels happening, water, nutrients, and so forth, and the very highly variable weather that we find in the Great Plains. And it makes it difficult to interpret the yield and harvest index results. In this instance, we use default parameters, input parameters, with very minimal calibration. Again, the point was not to try to make a good fit to the data, it's to look at model response. We have a bunch of data sets that we are using to evaluate it. Today, I will just talk about one of the data sets that we have, and just again, winter wheat and corn, even though there's other crops that we're working with. The main data set we used is the Dryland Agri Ecosystems Project. There are three locations in eastern Colorado, at least the original locations. And these, as we go from north to south in locations, the precipitation is approximately the same, but temperature increases as we go south, so that the potential evaporation increases as we go south. At each location, there is a catena or landscape topography, and so we have a summit, a side slope, and a toe slope. And as a result of this, we have different soil variables in terms of depth, quality, and various soil properties. Within each of these landscape positions, we have a variety of cropping systems or crop rotations that are being tested. The experiment began in 1985 and is continuing to today, through today, and into the future, I hope. In this, if we look at the observed yield here versus the simulated yield, this is the one-to-one line, and what we get is, you know, a scatter and with some definite outliers here, and it follows along. What's of particular interest to me was that if we looked at the harvest index, basically, especially if you ignore this one, we have basically a slope of zero. It's a very flat harvest index response. And this is going to be range across greatly different precipitation events, years and seasons and so forth. If we look at corn, we got a lot of scatter as well. And it's a little less clear what the harvest index pattern is on this, but it's hard to really see what kind of pattern we've got. Before I move to the main part of what I want to get to on this is the yield fits varied with the crops and depending which crop, and I didn't show you all the crops and years, and I didn't show the statistics, but more importantly, I wanted to reemphasize this point. The harvest index tended to be a more flat curve when compared to the observed harvest index. The model tended to overpredict winter wheat harvest index at low observed values, and it tended to underpredict both winter wheat and corn harvest index at high observed values. So this suggests that the simulated harvest index is not as dynamic as the observed harvest index. So really what I was more interested in is trying to understand those outliers. That's where I think we learn a little bit more than just points that fall along the line. And so I wanted to we'll go back to those graphs. I wanted to identify, was there a particular site or catena position or year that seemed to dominate the outliers? And we looked at it different ways where we looked at the difference between the simulated and observed values, whether it be 20% difference, 25, 30, all the way up to 40. And I'll show you the results of looking at differences of 30% or greater of those outliers. And then we want to see if we can start to relate them back to something in terms of precipitation, whether it be yearly growing season or anthesis precipitation, near anthesis precipitation, as well as other site factors. And in the study, we've collected cumulative rainfall by years. The only thing I wanted to say is that the Stratton and Walsh sites tended to have most of the years above this dashed line, which represents the long-term mean annual precipitation, whereas Sterling site had a pretty even mix between wetter and drier years. If we go back to that graph on winter wheat yield, same graph, here's the one-to-one line. And then this is the line that's minus 30%, plus 30%, and the far line is the 40% differences. And so what I really want to do is I want to look at where the model, these outlier points, where it's under-predicting, and up here where it's over-predicting. And the same thing for corn is what we got, looking at the over-predictions, the under-predictions. And I tried to figure out how to summarize this, and this is the best I came up with at this point in time, as we're in the process of doing the analysis right now. If we look at the points, and then we're going to look at winter wheat first, if we look at the overprediction points that are at least 30% difference, if we look at the three sites here, Sterling had the most sites that were overpredicted, then Stratton and Walsh. If we look at underprediction, it's the opposite response. As we go further south with the higher PET, Walsh and Stratton has the greatest percentage of underprediction. If we look at catena position, and that's pooled across sites, the side slope has the most overpredictions, whereas the toe slope has the most underpredictions. Then I wanted to look at years and overprediction. 1991 had six, evenly distributed between Sterling and Stratton. The rest, no real pattern here in particular. If we look at underprediction, 1989 had 12 of them, evenly between Stratton and Walsh. Then we had four times of six, and most of them being at Stratton. Doing the same thing for corn. Oh, corn was not grown at Walsh, just Sterling and Stratton. What we found, overprediction, equal between Sterling and Stratton. If you recall, for wheat, it was at Sterling was the main one. Underprediction, also equal between Sterling and Stratton. And wheat was Stratton and Walsh. If we look at catena position, this in corn, it was the summit that was overpredicted. Wheat was the side slope. And underpredicted, in this case, it matched with wheat. It was a toe slope that was underpredicted. Looking at the years, if we look at the overprediction, 1990 had the vast majority of the times, pretty evenly distributed between the two sites. 1995 was the next highest. Most interesting and cleanest was the underpredicted. 1992, 9. 1991 was 3. Unfortunately, I tried to look at just yearly precipitation. There was no relationship. You can't break it out between these two sites, you know, saying it was a dry year, it was a wet year. It wasn't clear. But one would expect that that would not be a good correlation, because yearly precipitation isn't going to be a good influence of corn, dryland corn production. So at this point, what I've really presented is a lot of preliminary works we're trying to sort out how these models are responding to highly variable water conditions and the timing of it. And we were focusing in on, is the harvest index value adequately responding? And I'm not sure how I went back, but I think the thinking currently right now is it looks like the harvest index equation needs to be more responsive to varying water deficits. In other words, we need to get some slope from zero. We need to get to water stress. And that will make the yield a little bit more responsive to water deficits as well. So on that, I'd like to thank you. It's been a wonderful symposium, and I hope you've all enjoyed it. Appreciate your listening. Before you ask, back in 1986, Jim, my very first agronomy meeting, Jim asked a great, great question that blew me away, and I didn't have an answer. So I'm fearful of his question that he's going to ask. So go ahead. Yeah, and I apologize. I was going to try to do that kind of analysis, and what I didn't realize was the way the symposium was going, in terms of that would have been a nice way to bring in more experimental work to this. So that's what we're working on. But the interesting thing about that, one issue I've had from a physiology standpoint of harvest index is that there's a lot of ways, especially wheat, gets to yield. And so there's so many things that come in, and where you can have very different harvest index calculated, but it doesn't relate necessarily always to, as yield goes up, the harvest index goes up. It just doesn't work that way. And there's so many things that can happen just specific events that affect the final yield that you're going to lose when you look at dry years versus wet years and so forth. And so and that's part of why we wanted to look at this, to kind of get a feel for how that way of approaching it works. So do you have a thought, since you you know the model probably better than I do? Do you know how it, what would you expect the harvest index to be and respond to? Yeah. Well, first of all, the way the model was built, and I think the original paper that I remember seeing was 1988, Jimmy Williams' paper, they were just saying near anthesis is a critical time. And I like a lot of what you're saying, because I tend to approach the plant from a developmental physiology more, and so I'm very interested in a lot of these processes that happen way earlier that's setting up the potential. Okay. At the same token, we do see a lot of relationship, especially with wheat, where right around anthesis is a critical time in terms of grain set and that. You know, if we could... Sure. But we do know that pollen is extremely sensitive to high temperatures and water deficits. Right. But this was the way the model was built. And well, now the harvest index is adjusted, and it starts, and this part I get a little bit confused on, depending on the version of the model, but it is starting to be adjusted. It starts at zero, and the question is whether it starts from planting or a little bit further in. So you are starting to take some, there is some built-in things happening earlier in the plant development and physiology. Plus, it's still factored on what biomass accumulation has been going on up to that point. So there is a way of getting in some of these earlier events having the influence on the harvest index. Does that mollify you at all? Maybe at this point we could turn off the recording.